Blog Talk Radio.
Rah. Killer Mike Bamboo. You already know. Yeah. No surprise, I'm from a gangbang culture, but we can keep it civil or pull a thang-thang on ya. Southern California where the sun don't quit, intergenerational gang so sons don't quit. But immediately you see that the problems that's in my city are secondary to what's propelling it in my city. I mean really break it down, take poor black and brown, educate them poor, take the jobs from out the town, then inundate them with the date of drugs and dumb TV, locked into a zoo and hunted daily by the police. Then you get a group of youth who know they don't belong, then they gather up and organize a number up strong. But see, the failure isn't seeing that the problem ain't the gang, it's the situation in the communities where we hang. So I'm so pro-gang, it might scare a motherfucker, cause I fix the misconception that the enemies are brothers.
Bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, upset the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, bang on the setup, homie, we been set up.
I tell them, I went from a street gang thing, then I joined a military fleet marine force thing. From a little bitty gang in the south of Los Angeles to dragging bodies out of their house to help a government who hell bent on keeping money spent on the missile. The reality's the difference between them shits is little. We had the objective of arming up over money, and they had the objective of arming up over money. And we told kids join us, we the truth. Lies about protecting our flock to get recruits. Then we found out we getting killed for a hood, and we don't own a single speck of dirt on that hood. Whether in a zone down south in Decatur, or in a flatlands off of Lenox and La Brea, or in a low-rise project in Chicago, big money come in and buy up our body.
Throw your sets up, we about to upset the setup.
We about to upset the setup.
Up to upset the setup.
Throw your sets up, we about to upset the setup.
Upset the setup.
Up to upset the
I
setup.
I do it for the Crips and the Blooders. BGF brothers, the real Freeway Ricky Ross and Chris Dutters. I do my thing for Hoover, I represent for Ford. So my folk and my people, so they set to support. Support a mean to Matthew, she might say the shot. So maybe next summer, no mama's gotta cry. Cause maybe next summer, nobody gotta die. Hell, even if we fail, somebody gotta try. The only way the system rules is somebody gotta lie. And the lie they told is old, they base it on your race. They separate you black, you brown, you yellow, and white face. Then we further separate by joining gangs and legislate. That our neighborhoods are now at war like we are separate states. So the police occupy our hood to keep down all the drama. So the Starbucks they just built is comfortable for soccer mama. And American Apparel comfortable for all the hipsters. And it's zero tolerance for all you spicks and you niggas and you chinks and you crackers. And it ain't about who's whiter and it ain't about who's blacker, but the money is a factor. And the factor is the factor we've got moved up out the hood. When starvation is present and absent is a job, a man with simple scars, or he will form a mob. If you should form a mafia, then you should think Sicilian. Side of hood for real. Every block, every building, every build, every build. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Gang bang, gang bang. Build, build. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Feed the chill, feed the chill. Gang bang, gang bang. On the system, on the system.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
You
be a peaceful revolution.
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over.
Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that. Get him where that hurts.
Starring Barry Dorton from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Great land, revolutionary grid. Welcome to another edition of Jordan Richard Radio. I'm your host, Mighty Secure, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate cook. Eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners, to eradicate cultural ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal, transforming the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Whereas our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reduce new African citizenship. Now, overall goal and primary goal is transforming the whole prison industrial slave complex into the biggest line through education and means, by transforming the criminal mentality to a revolutionary mentality. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'll let go of a couple of events that happened in history during this week. On November 6, 1746, Absalom Jones, a religious leader and one of the major leaders of the Black Pioneer period, born to slavery in Sussex, Delaware. 1868, Johnny Gill, minister and educator, was appointed Secretary of State by the Florida governor. 1920, James Weldon Johnson became the first Black Executive Secretary of the NAACP. In 1973, Cole Meon was elected mayor of Detroit. On November 7, 1775, Lord Dunmore, the deposed royal governor of Virginia, issued a proclamation that promised freedom to male slaves who joined the British Army. 37, Elijah Lovejoy was murdered by a pro-slavery mob by defending his printing press in Austin, Illinois. 1841, slave revolt on the Creole, which was en route to New Orleans from Hampton, Virginia. Rebels overpowered the crew and sailed a ship to the Bahamas, where they were granted asylum and freedom. In 1861, Union forces, captured permanent base on South Carolina coast at Port Royal, ensuring the de facto freedom of substantial number of slaves. 1934, Arthur L. Mitchell defeated Oscar D. Priest in the Chicago election and became the first Black Democratic congressman. 1989, new African Revolutionary National, a Kevin R. Shakira born. Also, from the 7th through the 8th in 1923, the first session of the 3rd Pan-African Congress convened in London. The second session of the Pan-African Congress was held in Lisbon. On November 8th, 1938, the first black woman legislator, Crystal Byrd Fawcett of Philadelphia, was elected to Philadelphia legislature. In 1983, W. Wilson Gould became the first black mayor of Philadelphia. On November 9th, 1731, Benjamin Banneker, a new African inventor and scientist, was born in Ellicott Mills, Maryland. In 1868, in Arkansas, Governor Powell Clayton declared martial law in 10 counties and mobilized the state militia and Ku Klux Klan crisis. In 1901, Boston Garden was founded by William Monroe Trotter. In 1970, Dada G. Odinga, the son of Baba Seiko Odinga, was born. In 1972, the police killed two new African students at Southern University of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in a peaceful demonstration. In 2000, Bruce Simmons named president of Brown University and became the first new African president of an Ivy League school and the first woman to head the institution on a permanent basis. On November 10th through the 11th, in 1898,
and a violent campaign designed to drive New African state and federal officers. Terror killed 8 New Africans and took over the city government of Wilmington, North Carolina. On November 11, 1831, Turner was hung in Jerusalem, Virginia. In 1901, Alabama adopted a new constitution with grandfather clause designed to eliminate New African voters. 1918, World War I. Apologize for that. My line had dropped. I was saying in 1918, during World War I, World War I ended with the signing of the armistice. Official records listed 370,000 new African soldiers and 1,400 new African commission officers. A little more than half of these soldiers served in the European theater. 3 new African regiments, 369, 371, 372nd, proceeded across the Jura for Vela. 369 were the first American unit to reach the Rhine. Very individual new African were decorated for bravery in France, where Henry Johnson and Needham Roberts of 369 Infantry Regiment. New African were angered by a series of racial incidents. In 1975, Angola gained its independence from Portugal on the Popular Movement of the Liberation of Angola, MPLA. Also on October 11, 1998, activist, revolutionary Arthur Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture, died in Guyana, West Africa, at the age of 57. On November 12, 1775, General Washington issued an order which forbade recruiting officers to enlist new Africans. In 1914, William Monroe Trotter confronted Woodrow Wilson in the White House over the issue of segregation of government offices and facilities. Wilson said that Trotter insulted him. In 1977, Ian Morrell elected the first new African mayor of New Orleans. In 1996, the 54-mile route of the Selma to Montgomery March was named a National Historic Trail. You know, those are a couple of events that happened in history during this week. There were more, but those are just some. I would like to say revolutionary greetings to all those that are revolutionary. Free the land, long live the resistance, free all the new African political prisoners, POWs. I'd like to salute everybody who been following our broadcast in 2014. I salute all the individuals currently educating themselves. I salute all the current enemy lines who are constantly fighting the struggle by putting out signs, material, going back to court and organizing and starting to collect. You know, and I'd welcome to the show tonight, Brother Minister Akin. Jawara Akin Bakele, free land, comrade. Okay, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm strong. I appreciate you for asking.
No doubt, man. First of all, I thank you for coming to our platform to show you guys understanding. Thank you for the work you did in the past, the present, and work you do in the future. Before you pop this out, tell the people a little bit about yourself so they know who we're talking to.
All right. Well, just a little bit about myself. My name is Jawara Akin Bakele. I currently reside in the Ida B. Wells District of the PGRNA. For those of you who aren't familiar, Ida B. Wells is also known as Memphis, Tennessee. In the Ida B. Wells District, I am a member of the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. Currently, I am the Minister of the Interior for the PGRNA. I am a People Center Council representative for the Ida B. Wells District. I am also the District Judge for the Ida B. Wells District. And also, I am the Deputy Minister of Information for the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. I have been in the government for about 5+ years now and have been doing work ever since.
Appreciate that. For educational purposes, What is your name mean, Jawar Akabakili? What does that mean?
So my name, Jawara Akinbekele, means peaceful warrior who has come into his own.
Okay. What language is that?
It is in Swahili, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Oh, man, that name is a very symbolic. And they also express a particular mindset the individual have or particular affiliation. So it's always good to know what names mean. So people can get a better understanding about the direction they choose to adopt a name or to choose to go to a name certain world they may choose to do, gain their own understanding. You know, you mentioned very... Buddhist and imprisoning of public Africa.
Freeland, brother, your sound kind of went out. I'm sorry, can you repeat your question?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Yeah, my phone hung up on me earlier, man. What I was saying is that what exactly are the functions and duties of the Minister of Interior to prevent the public Africa? What exactly does the Minister of Interior do?
Exactly what it does, basically, I am responsible for making sure that new African citizens are kept abreast of what's going on within the government, as well as keeping track of those new Africans who have declared declared themselves to be conscious citizens of the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa, and also to help establish and to maintain certified districts within the domestic United States at large for the PGRNA. And then some other things that are also included would be to help out the other ministries as needed, and to also keep track of those conscious New African citizens. And again, like I said, just make sure that as much information disseminated to them through any means that are available of communication by the PG.
Okay. That's good information. If a person would like to become a citizen, what actually the process of that? Is it talking a paper you fill out, or they contact you, or what does the person do?
There are actually several ways that could be done. You could always just reach out to a member of the PCC or the PRLC, People's Revolutionary Leadership Council, or if you do not have any of those contacts, you can simply reach us out on our website, which is pg-rna.com. And on that site, you will see an option to declare your citizenship through a census. So you can declare your citizenship there, as well as you can sign up for the website and be able to download documents, founding documents of the PGRNA. And so once you fill out the census form, then you're declaring your citizenship to the PGRNA.
Okay, that's understandable. I understand you hold various positions. You said Minister of Interior, Deputy Minister of Information, District Rep, and Judge, right? So, if a person signed up to become a citizen, would they be able to obtain these position or status the same way you did, as well as you do, or process in regards to that? You know, what's the process in regards to being a judge or a district rep, you know, a person interested or want to become one?
Right. I guess I'll start off with becoming a member of the PCC. So for that particular process, we have an election, much like the America does. Instead of every 4 years, though, we have our elections every 3 years. And at that time, those individuals who are, a part of a certified district. So, first off, you need to be a continental African citizen. But you also need to be a part of a certified New African district. Once you are part of the certified New African district, then you will have what they called a local election chair, who will help facilitate the election in your certified district. And that is where you can run, so to speak, for either PCC representative or district judge within your certified district. And then from there, and that's how you would hold those positions for the PCC and being a district judge. Now, for the Ministry of Interior, that is an appointment done by the presiding president. So that one, you would kind of need to be affiliated with whoever the president is at that time. And then the president, him or herself, makes those recommendations for who she wants or who he wants to be on their cabinet. And then that is how you get elected to that, or to become a minister, is through being appointed by the presiding president of the PTRNA.
Okay. What I want to know. You told her the process, right? So, in regard to a district, what exactly is a district rep function? What does a district rep do?
So, a district rep, as it sounds, they represent the district, and so any concerns that may come up within the district, any grievances that conscious citizens within that district may come up with, the district representatives take an oath to be responsible for those complaints and to have them go up through the proper channels within the government, PCC, so that they can be heard, addressed, and then relief can be found if it is required based on whatever the situation is.
Okay. And PCC stand for what again? What did that stand for?
The People's Center Council. That is the lawmaking body of the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa. Conscious New African Citizens are the highest form for the government, but the PCC is the form or the body collective that does the decision making and lawmaking for the provisional government. But the PCC cannot be in existence without the conscious citizens making sure that they are electing their chosen representatives and leaders to the PCC to be their voice on the council.
Sound very organized, man, and very political. You mentioned that you're a judge. So, what do judges do in regards to setting disputes? Like you mentioned grievances. What if a citizen wanted to file a grievance? Is there a process for that, or file a complaint, or want to press charges? Is there a process for all of that?
It's funny you mentioned that, because we actually, myself and two of the other judges for our prospective districts, I'm going through a process now where a citizen would like to make a complaint. So, yes, there are formal processes for that, and we are developing those here between myself and the other judges. We do have guidelines to go by in our code of emoji, which is our highest form of understanding for our system for the PGRNA. The code of emoji is where everything is laid out from becoming a citizen to becoming a PCC rep, as well as serving, and pretty much anything or any capacity within the government is outlined in the code of emoji. And so it does a very good job of outlining what certain processes would be, and then specifically for filing a complaint that is outlined. However, the specifics on it, I'm unable to speak to it at this particular point in time, but I do know that there is a process for that.
Okay, I appreciate that. You know, and if an individual wanted to find this documented code or emoji, where would they look for it at?
They would look for it actually on the website, pg-rna.com. You would sign up for it by becoming by just signing up on the website. Now, this is different from declaring your citizenship through the census. This is actually just creating an account on the website. And you can download the code of emoji from there.
Okay. So what you're saying is that the website had different functionalities and different points. You got to basically read to see what's going on or ask questions to get a better understanding. That's what you're basically saying.
Right or wrong. That is correct. That is
okay,
correct.
I appreciate that. You know, you said a Minister of Interior makes sure citizens have proper information. What do you mean by that, proper information?
Just proper information so far as current situations within the government, keeping abreast of any type of propaganda that's being put out. For example, we have our Nation Day celebration coming up in March of 2023. So disseminating that information to the citizens, any type of propaganda that's being put out there, whether it be through social media, through any of our social media platforms, and any type of situations that New Africans need to know about. Here in particular, recently we coordinated assistance to the water crisis situation in Jackson, Mississippi. So on the website, we put up information about where New Africans can donate if they want to donate water to that particular endeavor. So those are the type of things that New Africans need to know about. And so that is part of my responsibility to make sure that information is gotten to New Africans.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I understand that. You said the Nation Day is coming up next year. Historically, the Nation Day had been commemorated in 1969, right? In regards to letting people know that this is an independent black nation, quote unquote, New African nation, in the wilderness of North America, right here in the empire, and we struggle for independence. The people who don't know or understand certain things, right? So I also understand that personally that you identify through a term IT, right? What exactly is an IT? What exactly is that, you know? People hear the term all the time, I'm an IT tech, I'm such and such. What exactly is that?
So IT is an abbreviation for information technology. And basically anything that provides information and is technological, it has some aspect or someone has the ability to learn and become, I guess, knowledgeable about those aspects. And IT itself is a broad range of discipline, whether it deals specifically with computers, servers, software development, cell phones, mobile, cybersecurity, the software that goes into using ATM machines, the software that goes into the cameras that you see, the security cameras, the pretty much anything that is technologically connected is encompassed through the IT field.
Okay. You know, historically, I understand that various progressive movements in the Black leadership or the African movement have been attacked, you want to say, by COINTELPRO in the teachers, right, including the British Republic, Africa, RN11, Black Panther Officer of Defense, RAM, and so forth, and other organizations, right? And understand then that the security aspect was different. And now we got a more of a different security aspect, right? You know, we got people passing around the term like security culture, security platform. From your understanding, what exactly is a security culture? What exactly is that?
So a security culture, in my definition, would encompass vigilance through all forms of interacting through communication, through technology, whether that be using encrypted messaging. And when I say encrypted messaging, I'm referring to sending encoded messages that are not easily, able to be read by anyone not privy to that particular information. For example, back in the day, before telephones were as advanced as they are now, you could use a cup with a string between the two ends and communicate. And The issue with that is not secure because other people outside of those two cups, if you're speaking loud enough, the conversations can be heard. But it doesn't really give you security for your conversations, and so they can be picked up by anything. And that's similar to how it is now, because all of our communications being done wirelessly through cell phones and things of that nature, there have been studies where individuals have used some equipment or some signal grabbers, wireless signal grabbers, and simply can be outside of a building, turn on this device, and be able to pick up conversations that are being going on inside of the building just based off the technology that they have locally within their possession. Because the signals that are being communicated on are just open in the atmosphere because it's wireless signals and there's no real security or encryption on that. And then here and now, they do have what's called end-to-end encryption, your signal from the beginning to the end, so that only the person who you are meaning to have that conversation with be able to pick up on that signal. And if someone outside of that conversation does pick up on that communication signal, they're unable to decrypt or to unscramble the security protocol put in place to encrypt or to secure that communication that is being given back and forth between those two parties.
Okay.
And so A security culture in and of itself takes in mind those protocols to be as secure as possible through whatever forms of communication you choose.
Okay. Now, in regard to the security culture, right? In regard to that, can you tell us a few examples of like how you secure a platform? Like, favorite instance, you got an email or you send somebody a text message or you got a computer and you don't want your computer to be tracked or monitored. You know, what are some of the examples what are some kind of safeguards to defend against that? To defend against the unlawful search of your material, or because right now I understand that a lot of times, the majority of times that we put our information out there on social media and emails and so forth and so on, right, that the state or the government had access to the material and that they'll sell the material, they get material to government aid, they get the material to different people, you know, and how do you defend against some of that stuff? You know, and how do you know that? How you know what you're doing is secured or encrypted? How you know this?
Well, the best way is to just do your research. We live in an age now where you can learn pretty much anything by just going on Google or a search engine and typing it in. So the first thing you want to do is just become aware of those platforms that offer security. Like I mentioned earlier, you could just search for end-to-end encryption. So like you mentioned for text messages, you could just type in end-to-end encryption text messages. And what happens is on the search, I'm pretty sure you will be given platforms and applications to use that will provide that end-to-end encryption through text messages. The same thing for cell phone talking and things of that nature. They have apps that will help to facilitate that security consciousness. So far as computers are concerned, there are what they call security baselines out there that several organizations offer, where you can, basically what a baseline is, IT professionals have gone in and they have tweaked and configured security settings on a particular operating system. And when I say operating system, I'm referring to the programs that allow you to use it, so like your Windows or your Macintosh operating systems. So with these baselines, IT professionals have gone and they have looked at all the security settings that are available for this particular operating system, and they have implemented them, security protocol by security protocol. And what they do in these baselines is they give you pretty much a rating, whether it be a 1 or a 2. A 1 rating is secure, and the 2 rating is the most secure. But then also keep in mind that with the higher level of security, you also have to keep in mind that the more secure you become, the less opportunity you have for certain other functionality that may not be as secure as what you're trying to do. So, for example, there are some settings that you can change in your computer to have it more secure, but it will break the functionality of some other program that you may use regularly. For example, there is a thought process that the only true way for a computer to be secure is for it to not be able to go out on the internet and be able to be searched or to anything of that nature, period. So to have that higher level of security from that aspect, you would not want to put that physical computer on the internet whatsoever. And so if you need to use that computer to search something on the internet, you kind of have to weigh that out. Well, do you want the highest level of security, or do you want to go down a little bit to still be able to search online on the computer? So you always have to be conscious and understand the pros and the cons having the highest level of security. And so that's where you would go on to you use those baselines, as I mentioned earlier, and then they have other sites and other platforms that provide information about security as well. One, for example, is EFF.org, Electronic Frontier. And basically, that is an organization that stands and discusses a lot of cybersecurity issues through the world at large. And so you can go on that site specifically, where you can do research on things like how to use a virtual private network, VPN, for masking your internet traffic, or how to use some of those end-to-end encryption messaging services, like I mentioned earlier, to encrypt your communications. And so the site also does studies about how certain security and certain legislation is affecting us as a whole, as a community, in certain states and things of that nature. So to really be security conscious and to have that thought process, the best way to do it is to just be as informed as possible with the new trends. Because one thing about IT is that it's always changing. There's always something new coming down the pipe, sooner rather than later. So the most information that you can have or that you can keep yourself up to date on, the better you will be in developing your own security baseline for the communications that you use and for your people that you communicate with.
Okay. You know, according to your own understanding as an IT, do you think that, you know, that the COINTELPRO still exists in another form, or you know what I'm saying, especially in regards to all this information being gathered on these social media sites and other sites, you know what I'm saying, for particular reasons, and how people are being targeted as black identity screens, other things on social media. What do you think about that? What are your thoughts on that situation?
Well, my thoughts on the situation are that I always assume somebody's listening. In this day and age, there are ways upon ways to get information. And now, information itself is more valuable than most currencies, because depending on the information that you have, you could talk to governments, you could pretty much make a way for yourself out of nothing, just information that you have. So with information being as key and as crucial as it is, then obviously being able to get that information and to be able to have those types of influences and being able to understand what's going on is very key. And to again, just this understanding and have that depth of knowledge that everything that goes on, somebody's always watching. You know, there's a saying that the streets are watching. That's the same thing as it comes to information. There's always somebody able to find out or to be able to gather information, whether we like to or not. And so because of technology and how everyone now has a digital footprint, whether it be through using the cell phones, you know, their GPS app, going this place and that place, or using your cell phone, there are a lot of ways for people to find out information about us through the information we put out there that we don't realize that we're putting out there. For example, I'm pretty sure people have gotten rental cars that come with GPS or navigation systems in the cars. Think about this. Let's say you get in the car, you don't know, you're in a new city, and you're driving different places. And so every place that you drive, you have to put in the destination in the GPS. Now, when you get out of that car, what's to stop somebody from going in and downloading every destination that you went to and then going back and visiting those locations? It's nothing. So that is a part of having that security mindset and being able to understand the limitations and the expectations of using certain technology. Because I know myself personally, whenever I do that, I go in and I literally delete the history from the GPS if I do use it. And then that's even like on the same thing with your phones. Every time you use Waze or Google Maps to find a place, that's being tracked and logged on your phone. So if somebody ever got to the files stored in your phone, they can simply download that history and know every place that you went. So that also brings into thought about just having your GPS on your phone just in general. You know, even if you aren't using it actively, there are settings on GPS in phones and the old actual GPS that you put in the car that stores that information and it's readily downloadable for anybody that gets access to the phone. So just understanding your digital footprint and where all that has ramifications on goes a long way into developing that security consciousness. And developing your own personal baseline for being as secure as possible.
Okay. I have a question for you. But before you declared your citizenship, were you aware of the attack of the RNL 1171 or the attack of New Bethel? If you wasn't, at that time when you became a citizen, when you did become a citizen, when you found about it, how did you actually deal with it from a security aspect?
I was not aware of it before joining the PGRNA. But being that I was already in the technology field before I joined the PGRNA, it didn't really change anything because I was already developing security protocols for myself personally. All it really allowed me to do was to be able to provide what I was already doing myself to my new African brothers and sisters, and to be able to enlighten them about some of the security consciousness that I was already aware of. So it really just gave me the opportunity to inform more people and then to also implement some of those things that I mentioned, like the end-to-end encryption communication, as well as just being cognizant more of how much of a digital footprint we all leave in our interactions with the outside world.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I know you mentioned previously the virtual private network, like the VPN, right? Is this something extra that somebody that you can download or purchase for your computer for security, or is something that's already in there, you just got to know how to find it?
So it depends. If you're a standpoint of your cell phone, depending on the model cell phone you have, some cell phones already have a VPN installed in it. But then there are tons of other VPNs that can be utilized. And, again, that website I mentioned earlier, EFF.org, they have a very thorough and well-laid-out analysis of VPNs and the different functionalities and some of the pros and cons of using VPNs. And another thing you have to also be mindful, there is no one solution that's an end-all, be-all for security. A lot of times you need to do security in layers. And what I mean by layers is you implement your security based on what it is that you're trying to secure. So, for example, if let's use your personal computer at home. So a layer for your personal computer at home would be, so you want to secure the physical device. So in securing the physical device, you would have something like a password on the operating system. So when you try to log in, you have to put a password in. Another layer to that, you could have a password when you first boot into the computer. So before you even get to the operating system, you have a password on the BIOS, which is the BIOS is what runs before the operating system is even kicked off. So before you even get to the operating system, you have to get through the BIOS. So you can have a password there. So that's another layer of physical security that you can have. And then once you get into the computer, then you can have security, like I mentioned, for your network, which is the VPN. So you would have your VPN that would mask your IP address. And what IP addresses do, they are unique identifiers to the Internet. So for every device that you are connecting to the Internet to do a search, you have to have an IP address that connects to some server that allows you to be able to get that information from that web address that you're typing into. And so a VPN would be another layer of security that would be added on to protect your wireless signals through communication. So that's what I mean by layers. There is not, I'm just going to do this one thing and I'll be totally protected. No, it doesn't work like that. You have to, you have to be secure in layers and then understand where those pros and those cons are of those particular implementations of security that you're using for that particular device or for your personal information.
Okay. Now basically I want to say I understand what you're saying about the security culture and security aspects, the ideas, right? How exactly does the security culture tie in with your duties as a Deputy Minister of Information, Minister of Interior, Judge, and District Rep? How does security culture tie into that?
It ties in. It intertwines and intersects almost at every turn. For example, as I mentioned earlier, about the new African election that we have. to even be elected to the PCC or to being a judge. We have to have security so that we don't run into election fraud or things of that nature. From a PCC perspective, you have certain communications that you need to communicate with among PCC members. So then you would ideally want to use the most secure form of communication between the PCC members so that their information isn't hacked or utilized by some outside force to nefarious ends. So just like with any position in the PG or any position in our everyday lives, security-mindedness will always be a factor because a lot of the information that people converse with or who relay back and forth to people is not meant for everybody. And that in and of itself means that you have to have some type of safeguards and protocols to not allow that information to be given to everybody. So no matter what role it is in the PG, is it any of my titles or any of your titles, any of anybody's titles, there are security mindedness that needs to go into that so that you can make sure that the communication is only between those parties that really need it.
Okay. You know, if a person wanted to create a website, are there ways to put it secured on the website so to secure your website that you may have?
So for websites, there is something called an SSL certificate. SSL stands for Secure Socket Layer. And what that means is that the information that is being provided by the website is being encrypted, much like the end-to-end encryption I mentioned for cell phones. The SSL certificate helps to solidify that for websites. And the way that you can tell if your website is SSL encrypted is because in the navigation bar or the URL bar, you will see a lock. It looks like a padlock that, you know, we used to use on our lockers in gym school or in gym class or whatnot. And it's just right up there in the top bar of the URL. So that is one way to identify if the website that you're going on is secure by just seeing that lock. And that's a good way to do it. But again, you also have to keep in mind that there are ways to get around it. So there are ways to what they call spoofing SSL certificates so that you could potentially show a lot on the website, but it may be a totally erroneous website, and that goes a little bit deeper into it. But it is possible. So, again, that's also where layers comes into effect, where you don't just stop it just by seeing that lock, and then you're just assuming that the rest of the site is secure. No, there are other levels and other checks that need to be done in order to verify to your particular level that website is secure. Just seeing the lock on there is just one way of verifying if your site is secure or not. And there are other ways, but again, you just have to be mindful of those and just keep yourself abreast of the security updates as they come down the pipe.
One more question, then I'm opening the line for a couple of callers. Now, from your very own thoughts and philosophy and experiences, do you think that the PGRNA is still being attacked. Still being attacked, you know, since he stated. So now, do you feel like he's still being attacked? And if so, why do you think that?
I was by one of my mentors that your enemy will never let you organize in their face. And in this particular instance, our enemies are anyone who or any organization that is against us having our own independent sovereign New African nation.
Okay.
So, any organization that is against that is our enemy. And our enemies will not let us have what we want to have just out in the public, because it's not conducive to them controlling and maintaining power. Because power is inevitably what our oppressors is looking to have from us. And so as long as they are able to keep us under their thumb, then that's the ideal place for us. And so anything or any organization that seeks to rise above that, I feel that there are maneuvers and measures put into place to gain as much information as possible about those entities and those organizations. So whether it be back in the 68 or whether it be in 2022, the only thing changed is the methods by which they go about doing their reconnaissance. And a lot of times, because people nowadays are more focused on being seen, being heard, and giving that, you know, having that spotlight, they don't cater to the security aspects as they should. And so they just provide information that is not really information that's needed for everybody. And so with that being the case, a lot of times in our organizations, we're our own worst enemy, because we're providing the information that they're trying to get to them freely without them even having to work for it. I can see if they get the information and they've had to go through the trenches to get the information, at least you made it hard for them to be able to obtain that information. But just going out and just giving the information because you want to be heard, or you want to be like a strutting peacock, I don't agree with that. And so that's why I have the understanding that we're always being watched. No matter what we do, somebody's always watching. Just like the streets, there's somebody always watching on the internet.
Okay. I'm gonna read the question that a brother sent me. You know, he sent me a question. He wants you to answer. He said, "Is the pre-installed security on an Apple MacBook computers, parentheses, private browsing, DuckDuckGo, etc., secure enough? Question mark. Or do you need a VPN? Question mark."
So, again, that particular answer, it depends on the level of security that you feel you need for whatever it is that you're doing. So if what you're doing is of an important enough nature to where it needs to have more than standard security, then I would say yes. You would need to add as many layers as possible to secure that information to the best of your ability. And so, okay, it really just depends on like I said, I mean, what it is that you're doing. So, you know, I'm gonna leave it at that. So it just depends on what you're doing as to the level of security and the number of layers that you would need to add on to be as secure as possible. For most users, but I will answer it like this. For most users who are just going on the internet to search for things, checking email, things of that nature, yes, the out-of-the-box protocols, DuckDuckGo, and things of that nature will be good. So just like a standard way of thinking of it, you know, you would want to have DuckDuckGo. What DuckDuckGo does is it doesn't cache your browser history. So, for example, like on Bing search engine, it caches a lot of your searches. So if someone was able to hack into your computer, they'll be able to download your history, your search history. And so, again, depending on what you're doing, if you don't want your search history to be retrieved, then you would want to go with something like DuckDuckGo to cut that part out or whatnot. So at the end of the day, it really relies on what your goals are and what it is that you're doing for that particular piece of equipment.
Appreciate that. Caller, right? I got a caller. 85-953, your line is open. Yeah. Question, comment, stay through this at a time. 859-953, your line is open. Go ahead.
Free the land. Bobby Licata calling in.
Free the land, Bob.
As we talk about security, as we talk about the security of personal information, and then the security of organizational information, security of government information. Am I understanding you correctly? There are different levels of security that has to be implemented on those different levels.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. Depending on the level, or depending on the seriousness of the information that you need to retain, there are different layers that can be utilized to increase your level of security for information and for documents, for example, and just information in general. So the same, I guess, intensive rigors that you would want to utilize for a government, you necessarily wouldn't want to go through that same levels for, you know, individual people that just may be, like I said, searching websites or just doing general searches on their computer or whatnot.
Okay. Now, taking a look at one of the other questions that was asked, I don't know if you're aware, but you know, I heard you mention the term COINTELPRO, which of course was the domestic surveillance operation that was instituted by the FBI under J. Edgar Hoover. And according to research, they ended that program in 1971. However, Rolling Stone magazine just did a opens records request for the FBI files on none other than Aretha Franklin. And what was revealed through that open letters request is that the FBI continued to maintain surveillance on Aretha Franklin up until 2007. So if the program ended in 1971 and they continued surveillance on Aretha Franklin, which they started before 71, So if they continued it up until 2007, that means they continued the surveillance for 36 years after they claimed that it ended. Do you see this as an indication of the level of trust that African people should have toward the United States government?
Yes, most definitely. And that example in and of itself speaks to my contention to always assume that somebody is listening, no matter what platform you're using. Always assume that somebody is listening. And so, again, based on what it is that you're doing or what it is that you're trying to accomplish, you should center and you should prepare your security layers off of the seriousness of the information that you have and the work that you're doing. But yes, I definitely see that as an indication of how you should treat those entities that are so-called for your interest as Americans.
In addition to that, again, we have to go back and we have to look at the incident where the FBI and what they call Homeland Security took under their custody a brother that they claim was leading what they call black identity extremism. And when we look at that particular case, again, we see where the government may have ended, quote unquote, COINTELPRO, but they did not end domestic surveillance and African terrorism. So when we look at the comparison in terms of what that brother was doing and what Aretha was doing, you see the range of the kind of community service that was being provided. Of course, Aretha was a good friend of Martin Luther King, and they were scared of Martin Luther King, so therefore they're scared of all of his friends. The brother that was the brother that was charged with being a black identity extremist was organizing black people to actually identify as an African person and to love their blackness. So
you talking about Rocking and Balagoon?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So my question is, when you think about using quote unquote social media, is there a time where you could remember where the government has used social media to attack an African person? And especially someone who was not country, they had no their social media posts or information that they were sharing was not a major threat or any level of threat to what they call Homeland Security.
I cannot think of a specific instance off the top of my head. But just in the research that I have done and the information that I have gathered through my own journey with security, I do not see that as being something out of the realm of possibility. Because I I am of the mind that anytime your beliefs or your thoughts are contrary to the mainstream quid pro quo of the government or Homeland Security, then if we look at it from the standpoint of we are at war with our conquerors here in these United States, it will behoove the so-called people in power to not have a grip on what their people are doing. And so in having a grip on what their people are doing, that would have to include gathering as much information about any type of organization that is contrary to what your beliefs are that you want to implement. And from that standpoint alone, you would have to realize that there are things in place to quell anything like that. And so you would always have to assume that there are things out there being put into place to squash any type of uprising or any type of sayings or just any type of gatherings that are in contradiction to whatever the main agenda is. Did that make sense? Did I answer your question?
Yes, sir. I'm in total agreement with your assessment. But I also wanted to just take one quick second, I guess, and perhaps look at entities other than government entities that are gathering information that is being used against people of African descent. You know, there was an attack on this country by some of its own citizens on January the 6th. And there were a couple of what they call militia groups that were heavily involved in the organizing of that attack that was called by the then president of this country. And it was all centered around what they call nationalism. And when they're bold enough, then they would put white in front of that and call it white nationalism. But when they're trying to camouflage what their intention is, then they just simply call it nationalism.
Nationalism.
And they say that the people that attacked the Capitol building were patriots trying to protect this nation, and that made them patriots of nationalism of this country. So. It's my understanding that those two groups and others are heavily involved or propagating the idea of a Civil War number two. Do you think that it's wise for people of African descent to always publish social media outlet all of their business when we realize, as you said earlier, there is an attack on any sense of Africanness at all levels, whether it's conscious Africanness or just pigmentation of Africanness and kinfolk, skinfolk Africanness. So is it wise for us to overly expose ourselves?
No, not by any means or any sense of the word. Because, and if you look at it, a lot of the social media platforms, the owners have cut quote-unquote backroom deals with government entities. So any information that you put on there, they have these reciprocal agreements to where if they need the information, then it's okay for them to get it from your platform. Like, for instance, Facebook it has a reciprocation with the government. So pretty much anything that is being put on Facebook can be, you know, searched, you know, by the government. They don't need to go through the processes of requesting the information, which isn't really much to do, but I mean, it still is a layer, but I mean, it still can be done. And if people who we are using these platforms have these under the table or backroom deals with these organizations to allow them to operate, then they can't be truly trusted. And so in that particular instance, the only way to truly be sure is to go with something that I own, that we built for ourselves. And so I do know that there are platforms being utilized or being built that are of New African origin to kind of counteract always using social media through the known channels. But you know, you have to search those out, and you have to be willing to go the extra mile to do the research, and not just be lazy about it and just use what is commonly out there and in the mainstream media for everybody to use, because we already know that they're against us. So then, why would you utilize their platforms? It's just like with the quote from Malcolm. He said, you're in bad shape if you have to rely on your oppressor to teach your children. And so that's the same thing. Why would you rely on the people that you know who are actively against you to use their platforms to talk about something serious that has to do with the things that you're trying to accomplish for your people?
Very good, very good. If I can switch gears just a little bit one more time, I think I heard you talking about an upcoming election for the provisional government, the Republic of New Africa.
Yes.
As far as you know, what's the process for an individual to be eligible to participate in that process? To be a part of the what we call the black government.
Right. So from my understanding, the process, you would have to declare your citizenship to the provisional government, as well as being a part of a certified district within the government. And if you are not a part of a certified district, there are ways to go about getting your district certified or even creating a district where you resided. And then from there, it will be a process of finding what's known as a local election commissioner to help facilitate the election process. And that would also provide you with the ballots needed for voting. And other important documentation and deadlines that are relevant to the upcoming election.
So I'm gonna throw a trick question in here. Who should they contact if they want more information about the election process?
They should contact you, NEC chairman.
Wasn't all that tricky at all, was it?
Not at all.
So let me, again, I just want to let people know that I am a member of the National Election Commission of the Provisional Government of the Republic of New Africa, what we call the PGRNA. We are in the process of certifying communities as what we identify as certified people or certified population districts. Once your district is certified, then you become eligible through the process as Baba, Brother Akin had identified. You know, your community becomes eligible to participate, fully participate in the electoral process, and that full participation would allow for the citizens in your certified district to cast their ballots as citizens of the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa, a.k.a. the black government, that would allow them to send representatives, what we call district representatives, to the legislative body of the provisional government, that we what we call the People-Centered Council, would also allow for that population district to elect judges to help resolve conflicts and disputes that exist between us in our community, because we know going into the other courts don't work for us. So you'd be able to elect judges to help resolve conflict, what we call district judges, to elect conflicts in your area. We also have our own Supreme Court as a black government, and you would be able to vote for individuals who are running for judgeship on the people-centered court. You'd also be able to vote for the next president or reelect the current president, depending on who's on the ballot, for the next term, as well as we also elect three vice presidents to serve underneath the president of the black government. So the black government has a president, three vice presidents, we have Supreme Court justices, we have local district representatives, and we have local judges that we elect during our national election process. And of course, if there are some concerns that citizens have about the way that the laws are structured, then the citizen can ask to have a referendum placed on the ballot as well. For example, if the citizens wanted to add a fourth vice president to the ballot, then they could present a referendum, and we'd ask the citizens to vote if they agree that we need an additional vice president. And that's just one example, but there'd be many, many examples of referendums that have been on the ballot in the past. Now, for citizens, for listeners who may not be aware, the provisional government of the Republic of New Africa has its elections every 3 years. Our last election was in 2020, which means that our next election will be in 2023. And that election will take place on November the 3rd, 4th, and the 5th of 2023. What is so very unique about the Republic of New Africa elections is that we look for opportunities for inclusion, not for opportunities for exclusion. And that's why we have 3 days of voting. People can have an opportunity to actually cast their ballots. And we like to say that black votes matter more to the black nation. So we want all people of African descent to reach out to the National Election Commission. And you can do that by email at district council, and all of that is of course one word, at gmail.com. Let me repeat that. M and an E, you write the word district council and you put it all together, so it's nedistrictcouncil@gmail.com. And we guarantee that you will get a response, and the sooner the better. Although we recognize that the election is not until November of 2023, there are steps and processes that we have to take to, in order to certify districts, in order to certify the integrity of the election in all of the districts that are participating. And so we want to make sure that we have all of our I's dotted and our T's crossed, as Baba Akhenaten had said earlier, so that we make sure that our election process is filled with integrity, unlike what we've been experiencing in the United States elections over the last five national elections that they've had. There's been much controversy, and of course that controversy is growing each time that they have a national election. So I just wanted to, I hope I didn't overstep my bounds, but I just wanted to do that shameless plug for the National Election Commission.
You did what you're supposed to do, Bob. You know what I'm saying? That's what you're supposed to do, propagate, man. So you serve, you do what you, that's your purpose, your goal, your aim, you're supposed to propagate. So there's nothing wrong with
that. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
No doubt. Thank you.
All right. Well, let me say that I've enjoyed the conversation tonight. Kudos, Brother Akin, for the information. Thank you, Baba, Brother Omani, for having these sessions on a regular basis, and Asante for allowing me opportunity to chime in. So I'm gonna give it back to you guys, and I say thank you again, and free the land, free the land, free the land.
Yes, sir.
Free the land, Baba.
Okay. Do we have any more callers? If you want to talk, press 1 at this time. If you have any questions, statements, or you want to make an announcement, you can press 1 at the time. If I get involved in the dialect. Okay, hold on. We got a couple more callers. Let me see. 601-392, your line is open. If you got a question, comment, or statement, please do so at your time. 601-392, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, this is Brother Raul, Brother Kwaku.
Okay, free land, brother.
Free land, brother. First of all, I'd like to say thank y'all for putting out the information that you put out. According to the Provisional Government of New Africa, many people have not heard of it because of the prosecution that they had to go through during the 60s and 70s with programs such as COINTELPRO and any other program that they had to suppress black nationalism. You know, black nationalism is a threat to the country, but white nationalism isn't or wasn't. And, you know, they know these such groups exist and all that, but who they focus on is us. They focus on us. Now, what happened on January 6th, that was their wake-up call. That was their wake-up call. But we've been going through that kind of mess and those situations since we've been here on this, over here on these shores. Brother Akin was talking about the minister information and certifying areas. When we were in the PGRNA and the minister information was Baba Hannibal Afrique, and what his job was to go around and certify communities. And found that all these different national groups and everything else that we thought had stuff going, they had nothing. It was just rhetoric. Nothing was going on. So we came up and developed. We were going to certify certain groups as a unit. And what they had to do was, first of all, they had to have political education. So they had to have a study group for the political education. They had to also have a New African Scout a New African, they also had to do the New African Scouts. That was training our youth. And then also pay national taxes. Members in their group should pay national taxes, or they, as a group, pay national taxes. What are you doing toward that? And that was our administration. What are y'all doing to certify? I heard some of it. I didn't hear all of it. To certify these communities so they can vote, so they can have a rep, so they can have judges, so they can have a voice in the government, you know. And I think I heard about conscious New Africans, and I think that word for me is overrated. We have a lot of conscious New Africans who don't do shit. I mean, don't do anything but come up with theory. And our theory in the PGRNA is theory, practice, and analysis. So a theory that hasn't been applied is worthless, because you don't know if it works or not. And we're constantly have to redevelop our strategy because the enemy constantly redevelops his. So it never looks like we're getting ahead. But the more people that we can spread, and that's why I thank y'all for this blog, because the more people you can spread the information for, the more people you can empower to make an informed decision. Does this government work for us as a people? And we all know that answer. When you sit and watch on TV your child getting shot down in the streets for meaningless crimes, and then white kids can go in and shoot up churches, can shoot up grocery stores, can shoot up anything they want and be handled as precious cargo by the law enforcement, and our kids get shot down on the streets because they fear black men. You know, so again, I like to thank y'all for the information you're putting out. I thank you for your commitment also, because when we were in, we were overran by our elders, and I have nothing against elders, but we need new blood to come up with new ideals, because those ideals in the 60s, the PGRNA was a good idea, but the work was not spread out, or the work was spread out. There was more work than you had people to do work. So even in our administration, we had to double as the PRLC and the PCC, you know, and nobody embraces, and this is, we also have the Investment Association, we also have a nonprofit, but what we notice is nobody has a problem with practicing Ujamaa, collective economics. The problem comes with Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Everybody wants to be free, but nobody wants to put in the work. And the work is tedious, so you end up overworking. You end up overworking your workers because the work, and because they're overworked, sometimes the work is ineffective. So what is your thought? How can we build up the concept of Ujima where those that we do have can get with a program and collectively work together to accomplish the goal, to accomplish the goals of that program? Because our people are, when you look at other communities, they can come together and get stuff done. But there's a problem with our communities. There's a problem with our people. We compete against each other. We do all these other negative things, but we say we don't want to embrace this American style of, I call it indoctrination. We don't want to endure this anymore. but we don't want to work for our own freedom. So what do you suggest we do to really push the concept of Ujima to so we can really get work done? And that's my question. I also want to say hello to Baba Lucada and thank him for his comments also. And I'll be quiet.
All right. So from my perspective, one thing that we can do, we have to first understand that before you can do work with somebody, like you gotta trust them. And so I think it will go a long way for us to be able to establish that trust again. Once you have that trust among the people that you're working with, then you don't mind communicating with them. And then if you're able to communicate with them, then you're able to depend on them. Once you start depending on them, then you all can put forth work collectively. And from my research and from my studies, that was one thing that was taken away from us during whatever trials and tribulations were put upon us as New Africans. At the heart of that, they had to disestablish our trust that we had within each other, because a lot of times from historical perspectives, the African village was a tight-knit bond, and there was not one thing that could be done that everybody in the village may not know about. And then also, from the saying, being my brother's keeper or my sister's keeper, I think that is an element that is lost among us as we navigate through the society that we live in now, is that fundamental trust. For whatever reason, certain people, they just feel like, you know, everybody's out to get them, and things of that nature. And from that standpoint, there could never be anything built upon that, because if you don't trust the person you're standing next to, then you're certainly not going to want to work with them, and you're certainly not going to want to go above and beyond to get whatever programs or whatever agendas done that is needed to propagate the new African independence movement and to be our own independent sovereign nation. So that would be my suggestion to start off with, to foster the air of Ujima, collective working responsibility, to just figure out ways to rebuild that trust among our citizens.
Okay. Okay. Barbara Ryu, I think I had to be your own question, because we got a couple more callers that I want to pull in as well, right? But I appreciate you calling in, appreciate your statements, and appreciate your work you're doing. Open the line for another caller right quick.
Appreciate y'all, brother.
Appreciate you. My time left. 901-480, your line is open. If you have any questions, comments, statements, please do this with your time. 901-480, your line is open.
Freedom Land, how y'all doing tonight? This is Minister Queen. How y'all doing?
Strong. So it's
doing well.
Yeah, continue right. Limiting your question. Limiting it to one question, because I got another person got a question too, and we got nobody time left.
Sure will. I wanted to ask this question. Now, we have a lot of things that they said about to happen, right? And, you know, you were talking about the technology and everything. Like I said, I want to thank you for the information that you've given us tonight. It's been very valuable. I want to know, like, when if this stuff shuts down, right, this technology, these computers, this, that, and the other, what is your suggestions? What are we going to do when it happens? because they say it might happen, and I just want to know what are some of the things that we need to be preparing ourselves for.
Well, first off, you would you have to develop lines of communication. First of all, you have to establish who you want to include in your trusted circle. And in that circle, you will just develop ways of communication, develop meeting spots. You know, if XYZ happens, then we meet up at this particular place at this particular time. And, you know, you develop contingency plans. Well, you know, if someone's not there by this time, then go to this position, go to that position. It's all about thinking ahead and being prepared ahead of time. And then also doing research on the technology itself. So, for instance, if the electronic grid, the power grid goes out, understanding what options are still available. And this one I'll give you off the top of my head. So if the power grid goes down, you can still use CB radios to communicate, you know, ham radios, you know, your crank radios, you know, the CB radios like truckers use, FM shortwave radios, things of that nature can be utilized because, you know, they can run out batteries. And so they're not electricity dependent. So that's something that you can use to be able to communicate with your people. So having somebody who is familiar with shortwave radio operation could be one option that you can use if the power grid goes down or whatnot. And just doing that research and understanding. If I'm not able to use this, what else is there? Because, you know, technology happens in waves, and you have to understand where it came from originally to understand what a wave is now. And so a lot of the technology that's not being used now may be considered antiquated, but it still works and it's still being used, and so it's the same, you know, the same. They don't make stuff like they used to, so that speaks to the fact that a lot of the old systems, yeah, somebody may have come up with a fancier way of doing it, but the old way still works. And so if you are not able to use this fancy new stuff, you could always fall back on what the origin of that thing is.
Ashe, thank you. And I want to say hello, Baba Kana and Baba Raul. Thank y'all. And y'all had a great show tonight.
Okay.
Free
link. On the 5 minutes there, Sister Deputy Minister Queen Melly, we thank you as well, Sister, for the work you're doing.
Okay. And both of us are online. 901-292. Your line is over. Yeah, any questions, statements, or comments? And also be mindful that we got like 10 minutes left. So limit your question or whatever to one question. But your line is open. 901-292.
Free the land. This is Mama Io. Free the land, but
Minister
Bomani.
Bomani, Minister.
Yeah. Yes. By any means necessary. I really love the show. Great questions, great information tonight. My question to you, Comrade Minister, you do have your hands in many of the ministries. You're working on very various levels. One of the things that I see may be an issue for you is you've given us this wonderful information about IT. And as you being the Minister of Interior and a Deputy Minister of Information, how do we reconcile our push to get more information to our citizens, to make ourselves known more, encouraging our citizens to be participatory on a local level and a national level, and yet at the same time know that we have this big brother looking over our head. I yield.
So that question, I'm going to say it's a tricky question. And the reason why I say it's a tricky question because it goes back to the statement that I made that comes to the point of it depends on what you're using the information for and your comfortability level with the security needed for that. And being able to accept the pros and the cons of what you need to implement. So ideally, once the needed people are contacted and are willing to do the work, then you would need as much security as possible to get the information back and forth on an organizing level, having that the end-to-end encryption messages and things of that nature to build up and to get to cast the net so that you can acquire or to bring in as many new Africans as possible, then you may need to kind of loosen it a little bit, or loosen those efforts because to start, everyone is not going to be on the same level of understanding as it is known for being security conscious. And so you have to meet them where they are. And so in doing that, you would have to use as many platforms as possible to be able to get your message out to them. And then once they receive the message and decide that this is something that they want to pursue and they want to be an active member of, that's when you start tightening up the security reins and then becoming more selective about the information that's being disseminated to those people and those individuals that are confirmed to be having your best interests and your same mindset as it comes to doing the work that's needed for your particular goals. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm totally in agreement because we are being monitored and yet we are still trying to combat some of the negativities in the society. And we must, we can't avoid trying to what we call educate our people, spark our people. And so we are using the most modern means as well as other means to reach new Africans. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I totally agree.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, Mama Ayo, calling in. Very good work. We got less than 5 minutes left. Brother Mr. I can give us your final thoughts. Just going to leave us because we got less than 5 minutes left.
All right. I just wanted to say thank you for giving me the opportunity to be a participant on the platform this evening. I really enjoyed all of the questions and the conversations with my comrade, and I look forward to doing much more work in my respective ministries and duties with the provisional government. And to also say that if anyone would like to know more information or to reach me, you can go on the PGRNA website, pg-rna.com. You can submit your questions there. My email address is also on there as well. So if you have any questions, whether it be PGRNA related or even any IT related questions, anything at all, feel free to shoot me an email and I'll respond back to you as quickly as possible. Thank you again for allowing me to be a guest on this platform and Free to Land, and thank you all, brothers and sisters.
Anyway, thank you for coming to our platform. I'm sure you're not going to stand. Thank you for working on the past, present, and the future. And if anyone got any loved one, comrade, associated by enemy line, like learning about by Georgia University, Georgia University, you can go on our social media platforms, which is on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, up under Georgia University, or you can contact us via email, which is Georgia University
georgia71@gmail.com. Again, at georgia71@gmail.com. Long live the resistance. Long live the African independent movement. And free all our captive African citizens. And New African BDA, New African political prisoner, New African POW. Struggle for land and independence. Peace. Thank you all for calling in and asking questions.